Hey everybody, welcome back to Auto Transport Intel. It is Wednesday, it is noon Central Time. That means it's time for DOT Compliance. I'm your host, Jay, and this is the Auto Transport Intel channel. Now, DOT Compliance on Wednesdays, we go live for 30 minutes. Is the clearinghouse getting you down? Are you having trouble with regulations, scales, safety audits, hours of service, ELD? We cover all those things. Now, I'm the host of Auto Transport Intel. I'm not the expert. We've got Brian Riker. He is our expert, and he's going to take your questions. So here's what you want to do. Do me a favor. You see these buttons below your screen, right? First of all, you can hit the like button. Please do that. I appreciate it. And also, click the share button. Click the copy button. Grab the link. You can text it, email it, share it on social media. Let a friend know, let somebody know struggling with some of these regulations. You know how thick this book is, right? You've got so much that you're expected to know and do right. So share the link, help a friend, and also please do join the live chat. Say hello. We don't have anybody in here yet. That's going to change. We want you to ask questions live, answer them. And what we'll do too is if you miss the show live, put it in the YouTube comments below. And I will tap Brian on the shoulder and make sure we get your questions answered. Also, you know that you can go to autotransportintel.com, sign up as an ATI insider, get in touch with Ty. If you're looking for coaching, maybe you're looking for a dispatcher, you're looking for insurance, that's the whole point. Auto Transport Intel wants to help you grow your business. So without any further ado, let's go ahead and say hello to Brian. Now, before I do that, we had an unstable internet connection notice, but I think we're back, all right? So everybody hang on to your desks and your steering wheels because we're live with Brian. Brian, can you see us and hear us okay?
Yes, I can, Jay. You made me nervous for a minute because you froze up, and I know it's not me today because I'm on a fiber connection right. Sitting still in a building.
No, I got a local message, internet unstable, so we hit a meteor or something, but I think we're okay. But yeah, that was me, and so we're here, and we're live, and we're connected. Rob Stevenson is in the live chat. What's up, Rob? Thank you so much. So I think we're good. So, Brian, what's going on? We have less than a half hour. Clock is ticking. DOT compliance.
I'm gonna need my ELD just to keep track of the time we have on this.
Right. That's right.
Which, by the way, I have to log this as on duty, not driving time when I'm out delivering these trucks because it is work, even though it's for my motor carrier.
Now,
so that's what's going on.
Well, and you said so you're at the worldwide offices right now because you are. Yes. I mean, that keeps you busy.
Yes, it does. It consumes the most of my time for sure. Just because it takes time to drive from one state to another, but I deliver new tow trucks and car haulers all across the country for the fine folks at Worldwide, and I love it. It keeps me current. So like I've always said, I'm a practitioner. I'm not just a guy in an office that knows how to read a book. I'm out here every day in these trucks just like you guys are. I don't load up anymore at the auctions or at the railheads or the ports, but I'm still driving. I'm still dealing with motor carrier on the side of the road, the traffic, the crazy weather, the whole nine yards. So at the heart, I am one of you still.
Anything you've seen lately that you want to mention? You know, like, I can't believe that guy's doing that. I don't know.
I've been seeing a lot more speeding lately because traffic is still a little bit light with the volume down for COVID. I'm starting to notice an uptick in speeding enforcement again. We're seeing the troopers are pulling people over, so we're seeing law enforcement back on the roads. And what I would like to see, I'll use this as my shameless plug for slow down move over for anybody on the side of the road, but especially for highway maintenance workers and tow truck operators, because we lose a tow truck operator once every 6 days to a struck and killed by accident on average in the United States. And that is a sobering statistic. So please slow down, move over, pay attention. You should be looking 15 seconds ahead of you. Anyhow, you should be able to see what's going on up ahead. So that's what I see.
No, that's a really good point. I'll tell you, because I mean, it's a personal thing, and I try not to say it all the time, but I can't believe the way people drive. And that sounds judgmental, like I'm a perfect driver. Although, I got to tell you something crazy. I feel like I'm usually the slowest one in my, you know, in my lane section. Everyone's blowing past me, and I'm thinking, what are y'all doing? Like, why? Are you three quarters of a second? You're not on ELD. The mom in the minivan's not on ELD. There's no reason to drive like a bat out of hell. I don't get it.
I agree, and it puts us all at risk, and we lose good truck drivers every day who give their life as they try to avoid accidents caused by motor vehicles. So that's what we're talking about, accidents. That is a hot topic, crashes. I have a customer going through an issue right now where he's had two crashes in the last 18 months, which puts him as a one-truck operator in the intervention threshold where FMCSA is going to come in, investigate his operation, and tell him what to do. One of the crashes is not his fault. He was rear-ended and stopped traffic. And so it's important, if you have anything on your CSA score that does not belong there or you think does not belong there, contact somebody, ask about it, and then file a data queue challenge. We're in the process of filing a challenge to remove that first crash from his record so that he comes back out of the intervention threshold for the crash indicator on the basics. And FMCSA stops wanting to come to his office and tell him how to operate. And it's going to affect his insurance renewal. If we get the one not at fault removed, it will help him with his insurance renewal, which is coming up soon as well.
You know, it's interesting. And I'm fighting. I don't know if Zoom made an update. I hate that. There's enough to manage, but Zoom is like looking different this morning. I'll deal with it. But since I'm on my soapbox, I do want to say, if everybody else had the same regulations and surveillance and inspection, you know, 1984 Big Brother, you know, feeling that the carriers have, my goodness, that would change the face of the way people drive.
Well, exactly. So here's another one. This is a hot topic issue that's going to come back up again, not being political, but we have a Democratic administration coming in next week. Speed limiters are going to come back up. They're a hot issue for the Democrats. They want to slow down big trucks. They have this misconception that slowing the big trucks down is going to save lives. In fact, it's probably going to make the crash rate increase, because you're going to have people doing stupid stuff to try to get around that wall of trucks that everyone being set at 65 miles an hour will cause. So, yeah, piggybacking off what you just said, imagine if we told everybody that they had to speed limit their car to 65 miles an hour. We would have an uprising. They would burn the Capitol.
Man, they would have another Capitol storming. I was driving and I saw, I don't know, it was multiple lanes, and yeah, it was a truck side by side, right? And I just immediately thought, that's just a bad situation all around. And what people don't realize, residents see that, civilians see that, and they think, oh, these darn truckers. No, they've probably all got these governors, and they're all fighting them right now, and they got their ELDs and everything else. Yeah, there's a tipping point of reason. That might even be the name of this episode, Tipping Point of Reason.
Absolutely, Jay. You're absolutely. So although it's not DOT compliance yet, because speed limiters are not mandatory, it is something that you should go talk to your local lawmakers about when you get home. When they have a town hall, make sure you go in and talk to the senator, your representative, and tell them how you feel about speed limiters so that we maybe can stop this from getting shoved down our throat.
I appreciate that point. So here's what I do. I'm looking at the time. I thought, you know what? Let's go into the live chat. Ken Tuck says hello. What's going on? Devin Richards, Victory Lap Transport. Hey, Devin got his medical card. He's in Virginia. So that's good. Good job, Devin. Rob Stevenson's talked about fuel costs too much to speed. Andrew Serica, he was on last night. What's going on? Brian and Jay, Secure Motor Transport. Brian, do you see active drive time currently at 11 hours a day dropping with the new administration?
I don't think so, although it is a hot topic issue for him. Some of the safety groups out there would like to see drive time limited to 8 hours. Some parts of the Democratic administration, the current sitting senators, Congress, and the Biden administration had wanted to see us roll back to 10 hours of drive time like we had prior to 2004, but I don't see that happening. Our hours of service rules as they sit today went through a very intensive rulemaking process. I don't think they're going to roll them back. I do see them possibly starting a rulemaking process. So in 2 or 3 years, we might see some minor tweaks to them. I don't see them rolling them back. I see them, if anything, taking away some of the guidance exceptions, tightening up personal conveyance, tightening up this new guidance about yard moves, which is a last minute change, and possibly removing some of the agricultural haulers exemptions, although ag is still a very powerful lobby in DC, so that may not happen. But no, I think we're safe the way we are for the next couple of years.
Awesome. Appreciate that. And we got another good question here. Let's go to, okay, so Devin is asking, hey, Brian, we got our DOT number in September, but we've not got our MC number yet. Will we still be audited, even if we're not running yet?
Yes, you can have the new entrant audit with just a USDOT number. So when you get your notice of your new entrant audit coming up, you will need to tell them we have not started operation yet, which they can evidence that by the fact your MC number has not gone active. That said, if you are running exempt freight where you don't need an MC number, such as wrecked or disabled vehicles from the primary point of disablement or certain other products, then you are actually an active carrier and they will put you through the full new entrant program. Most likely you're a normal car hauler in as audience in this show. So most likely you're not doing anything. Just tell them you haven't operated yet. They may ask for some proof of that. Your proof is you don't even have insurance or anything. If you don't have your MC number,
right? That's
making an assumption here. Now keep in mind though, if you got your DOT number back in September, you have 12 months to do your MC number, if you the insurance for your MC number, if you applied for it at the same time, before you have to start all over again with a new filing fee. Now, if you did not apply for an MC number at the same time, if you selected exempt for hire or intrastate where you need a DOT number only for identification purposes, then you can add an MC number later, but you still have a filing fee for that. I'm not quite sure your situation.
And I was just going to say is that since we're kind of brushing through topics, I put the link to your site in the live chat. So, Devin, if you're looking for further guidance, which seems likely here because, you got a good question, go ahead and click the link. You can contact Brian. He's got his phone number, email up there, and you can take it offline. Silver Mint says, seen a couple videos on this topic. Are there any rules that compel a driver to assist the DOT with the inspection? One driver was arrested, but that's a separate issue.
Rules that compel you to inspect are general. There isn't a specific rule I can point to that says thou shall help the inspector. However, you are expected to assist them to the best of your ability with the inspection at the side of the road. And really, it goes a long way to be cooperative with them. If you start not cooperating and trying to give them a hard time, you're going to be there all day. They will find a reason to put you out of service, because if they can't properly inspect the vehicle when you're being competitive, they're just going to place it out of service.
Right. Some of that just gets into, I don't know under what circumstances you can argue with an officer and it works out, but
very, very rarely does it work
I've never heard of that. Let's see here. We've got a couple things we're going to talk about. Let's do this. Let me bring these. Got a couple items. So let me share my screen. And let's do, these are from YouTube comments. So like I said, if you miss the live show and you put it in YouTube, we will get to it. Here's one. Saw Brian the afternoon. Had a question, forgot to ask. I plan on hauling interstate and intrastate from PA. Will be running apportion plates. Will DOT and MC cover me, or do I need a PA, PUC in addition to DOT and MC? Thanks, Andy.
That's a great question, because there are some states that have specific intrastate authorities, Pennsylvania being one. The Pennsylvania Public Utility Commission, that's PUC, regulates point-to-point moves. For those of you that are not based in the state of Pennsylvania, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, for those of you not based in the Commonwealth, You do not need PUC authority anymore to do point-to-point work within the state. Your UCR covers that. But if you happen to be blessed like I am and you're a resident of Pennsylvania and your motor carrier is based in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, then you need PUC authority to do point-to-point work within the state. So to answer Andrew's question, which I already answered offline, answer his question, in his case, yes. He needs a PUC number if he's moving a regulated commodity from point to point within the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And you'll find that is true in Ohio, California, New Mexico used to have their PRC warrant. I don't know off the top of my head if they do anymore, but there's probably half a dozen to a dozen states that have a public utility commission that regulates transportation within the state borders.
Since we're on, I think this is probably relevant. Andrew asks, what do you think are the biggest changes you see coming with the new administration? So at a federal level.
I see a push for speed limiters again. I see them rolling back the under 21 driver pilot program, which they're...
Hang on, everybody. We're on... that was me again? It's a good thing I do my Tuesday night show in the evening. Hang on to your chairs and your steering wheels because we're coming right back. Hang on 1 second. The internet is back. And so, Brian, can you see me and hear me? Are you okay?
You've stayed on with me for the whole thing.
Okay, cool. All right, so we're okay. So what were you saying? Please continue. You were talking about rolling back.
Yeah, I can see him rolling back, putting speed limiters in, rolling back the under 21 pilot program to take away the feasibility study that FMCSA is trying to do to decide if 18 to 20 year olds can be safe interstate drivers. I see a push for more underride guards on large commercial vehicles and just a general tightening of the safety culture, which isn't necessarily a bad thing as long as we go about it in a way that industry can afford to comply with these new mandates.
But the underguard, that one, that came up on a show, that could get expensive, couldn't it?
Could be very expensive. Fortunately, most of the draft legislation I've seen on this excludes specialty vehicles like car haulers because it's not practical to put an underride guard on a car hauler.
Thank goodness, right?
Yes.
Because what concerns me is, you know, zero tolerance, no man left behind. If you have a very small number of cases and you think that a change, an expensive change on a nationwide global level is needed, that seems like I don't want to get off track, but automakers allow for a certain number of deaths before they make a major change. And I'm not saying deaths is great here, but the underguard thing, I don't know, but I just had it last night. There was another car underneath a flatbed. But let's go back to the minivan mom driving like a bat out of hell. What are you doing? Let's talk about what you're doing. Do we need an underguard on your minivan?
Yeah, maybe they should have the guard on it that are front bumpers so that it can't drive under our large commercial vehicle.
I don't want more laws to stop minivan moms from driving like bats out of hell, but I'd really like that to stop happening. And I see it all the time. It makes me crazy. What are you doing?
We can't compel safety and common sense with regulations. So that's a cultural change. We need to go back to driving when we're driving and not trying to do 3 million other things.
And I need to get off my soapbox because it's just not, you know, it's not conducive to business. Hey, let's do another screen share here. Let's go to... CDLB. Here's a question. CDLB. All right, so I have a CDLB. Straight truck trailers good for this? This was on YouTube.
He can do any straight truck he wants with a CDLB because CDLB is 26,001 pound or above, provided that he is not towing a trailer with a gross vehicle weight rating greater than 10,000 pounds. So a CDLB is perfect if you're going to drive a four-car carrier rollback. and still tow something small on the wheel lift in the back. CDLB, you can drive an 80,000 pound concrete pumper. It is perfectly fine. You just can't tow anything behind it over 10,001. So for our hotshot world and for the general car haul world, the CDLB is fairly useless unless you are in that niche market where you're operating the four car rollback truck. So if you're going to go for your CDL, go for the A right from the beginning and don't get stuck in this position where you have to go back to school or back to the testing facility to add the A later.
It seems like this is a recurring, it's going to be a recurring theme, right? CDLB versus CDLA. Why is that? Is it because of all the additional requirements when you go to CDLA? Because CDLB seems to be really popular. I mean, even on Dispatching Live, we regularly talk to folks that want to stay under the weight limits, etc., whether it's the equipment they have or the license that they want to get. That's just going to continue, isn't it?
Yes. And I think mostly it's a misunderstanding of how weight ratings and actual weight and registered weight all play into the different regulations. And so mostly it's a misunderstanding of what a CDLB actually means. And the B is the easiest of the CDLs to obtain because every school bus company out there, every home heating oil company, they all need drivers. Most of them give you the license for free and hope to get one season out of you. So that's the easy one to obtain. The test is easier to take. And so I think mostly CDLB either comes from people that have been in the construction and other vocational trades, and now they want to get into the transportation industry specifically, or they just misunderstood what the B would allow them to do based on weight ratings.
Do you think that this is the beginning of opening the door to the, you know, the war between stingers and wedgies?
No, I really don't. Okay. I'm happy to see more people that have a CDL license or are interested in obtaining one that are realizing just how difficult it is to stay safe and compliant while trying to stay under 26,000 pounds and be profitable without having an ultra specialty niche such as final mile delivery or exotic car transport or something like that that is more than just picking cars up for a broker from an auction and taking them to a dealer or vice versa. So I am happy to see that there's a lot more interest in commercial driver's license and CDL required vehicles. But no, I don't think it's the beginning of the war between the stingers.
I don't mean the beginning of the war, but and I don't want to get into that. What I want to get into is in a delivery economy, I mean, hot shotting, home delivery, flatbedding, that demand is going up, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So, and CDLB is fine for that, right?
As long as they're not towing a trailer or a vehicle over 10 pounds, yes.
This is where you get into the details of the regulations. Because if you screw that up, what happens?
You're operating out of class. You'll get put out of service on the spot. You'll get a hefty little fine. Some states consider operating out of class, operating without a CDL, which can prohibit you from even going and getting your CDL for 60 days or more in certain states. So it'll be a mess if you don't have the right class of license for the vehicle you're driving.
Or what you're towing.
Correct. So and it's really...
Yeah.
I like it's this really topic. Easy. Sorry, Jay.
No, I like this topic. Operating out of class. It's really easy, yes. You were going to say?
It's really easy to accidentally operate out of class, especially those of us that do the salvage or in-op transport with towing equipment. So a flatbed, a two-car carrier, as we call them, or a four-car carrier in the industry, where you have one up on the deck and one on the wheel lift behind it. It's really easy to take that 25,950 GVW Freightliner M2 or Hino or whatever, throw a car on the deck, car on the wheel lift, you're good all day long. But now we go pick up that F250 or F350 that's got an 11,000 pound gross vehicle weight rating, hook it up to that wheel lift, tow it into the auction because you can't put the big pickup truck on the deck with another car on your four car hauler. Now you went from, well, let me take the four car hauler out of here, do it on the little truck. You go from no CDL to needing a Class A CDL because truck is 25.9, vehicle in tow is 11. Together, that's greater than 26. Vehicle in tow is greater than 10. Your CDLA from needing no CDL before you pick that pickup up. Real easy to happen. Four-car hauler, and this is where the B comes in. I got ahead of myself. Your B license is perfect for driving that four-car hauler that has a 33, 34,000-pound weight rating. But the same thing, tow a car behind it, B is fine. Put that same 11,000-pound rated, not actual weight, rated F-350 on the wheel lift behind it. You now jumped from a B to an A license, and you're going to get an operating out of class ticket when you get pulled into the scale house.
Couple good comments here I'm going to go to in the live chat. Let's see here. First of all, I want to go back to Two Bears. This is interesting, and that's why there's always an exception, man. My school bus license was harder than my Class A test, and I held the Class A first.
It depends on the state you're in. I had my CDLB with the S card in Pennsylvania since 92, and we had a 40-hour class that was mandatory to take, and then there was a lot of direct observation, and then there's, to keep it current, you have to do a run a year with someone observing you. So yes, the school bus license is difficult. But most school bus companies will give it to you for free, which is how we end up with a lot of Class B drivers that, or they were just vocational drivers working dump truck or whatever for a construction company.
Andrew Serica, also just a general question because it frustrates me. Why did my CDL Class A school cost me $3,500 when I got my permit on my own?
Because the school wanted to make money. Right. Yeah, you seriously.
Sorry.
Hey, there's a liability to it because the insurance to run a training school is not cheap. I do a CDL school on Saturdays for a customer of mine, and the insurance is not cheap to do it. You think car hauling insurance is expensive. Imagine talking to an insurance company and letting you take brand new people that have never even seen the inside of a truck and take them out in traffic. And really, it's just because they could. Shop around. If you don't actually want the education and you just want access to the truck and the road test, you can find less expensive. If you want the education, a good CDL school without consideration of them helping you get your permit is $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 or more, because it's going to be a 6 or 8 week program where you'll fully understand the truck, the rules of the road, the regulations, the whole nine yards. So again, it's just a matter of shop around. That'll tell you what the best deal is for the area you're in.
Always get a second opinion. And Silverman asks, is it legal to install flamethrowers to prevent tailgating? I said, yes, depends on the state. Actually, I didn't even say yes. That way I can't be accused of inciting a flamethrower.
I wish.
In fact, no depends on the state. Huh? okay, so let's see. One more. We got a couple more minutes. And really do appreciate you guys tuning in, asking questions, saying hello. And let's see here. Oh, wait a minute. I need to share a screen. And let's go to... Okay. Oh, new hotshot question. This is good. It's the end of the show and we're covering new hotshot questions. You know, we want to talk more about new car hauling in general. And I guess, I don't know how and when we'll tackle that because it's going to be ongoing. So let's do this. I'm going to sidebar that. Here's the question from last night. Somebody asked, is there a way we can get three DOT officers on the show? We want to explore that. We'll sidebar that too. How about that? Because yes. we can't commit to anything. Couple questions in the live chat before we go. Zap Transportation. What's up, Jay and Brian? Zap Transportation here. Just got signed up with Central. In the doc pack, they asked for a DOT certificate. Are you able to clarify what that is exactly? Excellent.
Excellent question. Perfect. When you obtain your operating authority, you will get a letter that is your certificate of authority. It'll have your motor carrier name, address, your DOT and or MC number printed on it. It's a single page. They want a copy of that. If you can't find it, you can log into your FMCSA portal, which you need your DOT PIN number to do to create access to it if you don't already have it. And there's a spot where you can request a copy of documents or letters that had been sent, or you can just send an email to fmcsa.dot.gov and request a duplicate copy of your certificate of authority. And it's a new thing that they're issuing duplicates. They used to be one and done. If you lost that letter, you were SOL, but now you can get duplicates for it.
like the like a social security card.
Yes.
Now, is that portal, is that at the fmcsa.dot.gov?
Correct. You can find it there, or you can just go directly to it by typing in portal.fmcsa.dot.gov.
I'm going to share that link. That's good info. I didn't even know. Oh, there it is. It comes right up. So, yeah, portal. I'm going to share that in the live chat. portal.fmcsa.dot.dot.gov. And that pulls up the /login default page. That's great. Yeah,
and that'll take you to a link. If you don't have a login, it'll take you to a link to register and create an account. And that is where you manage all things DOT for your company. Through that portal, you can do your MCS 150, which is your biennial update for free by yourself. You can see any enforcement actions, recent copies of any letters they've sent you. You can access your safety score. You can assign who has access to this information for you. And if you're a CDL company, this is where you assign your drug and alcohol clearinghouse administrator so that they can then go create a drug and alcohol clearinghouse account and comply with those regulations.
Did you query yourself? Be sure to do that, right?
Yes.
All right, Brian, we're up against the clock. The ELD has hit the end. We'll need a graphic for that in the future. So I've got to let you go, man. This was another great show. It's really an interesting journey, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I'm enjoying this, and I'm loving the feedback and the questions we get from the audience. So happy to be here. Glad that we decided to do this weekly now.
Me too. If we missed your question, Andrew, I see him, and Andrew wants to talk about his Class A license, and he's just a little irritated about some of the what he's had to go through, and we understand that. We know that's the thing about DOT compliance is not fun.
No,
that's why it's so important. So, Brian, thank you so much for taking the time weekly to do this. And if you need help, I put put Brian's link in the live chat. I'm going to share it again. His company is Fleet Compliance Solutions. Go to fleetcompliancesolutions.net, contact Brian, and maybe just make contact. So if you end up in that awkward emergency, you're already in touch with him.
Yep. I love to talk to people, so feel free to give me a holler.
Okay, man. We're going to say goodbye. Stay safe, and we'll see you soon, Brian. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jay.
Okay, take care, and the meeting is over, and that's it. That's DOT compliance for Wednesday, January 13th. Thank you so much for tuning in and saying hello in the live chat and asking questions. It's obviously a big part of the show, and it means a lot. The community is growing, and like we said, if you missed the live show, go ahead and put it in the YouTube comments below. And I will tap Brian on the shoulder, make sure you get help and answers. And also do this. Go to autotransportintel.com. Sign up. Join the show. What you can do is get in touch with Ty. I want to put you in touch with Ty. If you're looking for a dispatcher, you're looking for, you know, you're a broker and you've got questions, whatever it is, whatever your vertical is, Auto Transport Intel welcomes everybody. So stay tuned. Stay safe. Dispatching Live is tomorrow. We'll see you soon. Thanks so much.